Since 1898, Marquee Who's Who has offered our distinguished listees the opportunity to set themselves apart through our print publications. Now, Marquee Radio offers these illustrious professionals the chance to shine in our one-on-one interviews. My guest today is Dr. Patrick Palmer, who is a professor emeritus at the University of Chicago. How are you doing, Patrick?
Okay.
Glad to hear it. So let's start off by talking a little bit about your field of study. Can you go into any detail about what is the focus of your research?
My research is mostly focused on in radio astronomy on a specific title, specific topic of molecules in space.
So for a layman, how would you describe that?
Well, interstellar space is famous for being mostly empty, and it is, but it's also big. So, and in fact, chemistry can go on in interstellar space. And form molecules, which when I started astronomy, that was a dubious proposition.
So was it your focus to determine how these chemical processes could take place in the vacuum of space?
Well, it isn't quite a vacuum. By Earth standards, it would be a vacuum, but it's not. It's got all kinds of atoms floating around in it and molecules. And so chemistry can go on there. It just goes on at an appropriately slower rate because it's cooler mostly. And it's also to explore for the individual atom to explore its environment of other atoms and occasionally react with them.
So what kind of chemical processes are we talking about here, sir? Are we referring maybe to the more standard chemical reactions we'd see here on Earth, or perhaps something a little more exotic considering the nature of where this is all taking place?
Well, it includes chemical processes that we're familiar with, but there was one big discovery or realization by Professor Klemperer at Harvard and his then graduate student, who's now a distinguished whatever position, is that reactions are much more likely if you have ions involved than just atoms. And the cross sections for forming molecules with collisions of ions or ions with other atoms or with molecules is just much larger. So it's a much more likely process than people thought about at the time I was entering this field.
Speaking of the time you entered the field, what made you interested in it to begin with?
Well, that's pretty hard to describe. I was a graduate student in physics. All my degrees are in physics. But I got a summer job at Harvard with Professor Ed Lilly, and he was running radio astronomy at Harvard then. And so he hired me for a summer, and we started on a couple projects, and they were interesting, and it just seemed logical that I would continue working on that.
So what was the leap from physics to astrophysics?
Well, as far as I was concerned, there wasn't any leap. It was just a slow evolution. Physics includes a lot of things, I was interested in. But I didn't know anything about astrophysics. I'd always been interested in astronomy. And my parents had occasionally, on a clear night in Michigan, we'd go out and look at the stars and things like that. So I was always interested, and I always read about astronomy. But I don't think I really realized that anyone could have a job, a career in astronomy.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just easy to, once I started moving in that direction, I pretty much found it to be a natural place for me.
So looking back over your body of work, would you say there are any practical applications to the research you've done?
Well, it would be way too early
mm-hmm.
to have any practical applications.
So you're thinking more along the lines of when we become more spacefaring, if at that point maybe there will be more specific applications for your work.
Well,
is that right?
It's not only space. It's that some of the chemistry that's evolved, which I didn't do, and that has been beautiful work and led to discovery of things that no one expected, and that has led to a lot of applications now.
Such as?
Oh, the use. I don't want to go off into too long. But the buckyballs,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've seen.
Yes, I am familiar with that. It is, these days, they become sort of a toy. They sell at shops where they're little tiny magnetic balls and they stick together to form, usually it's a cube-like matrix.
Oh, these typically contain about 60 carbon atoms. And they're very useful for lots of purposes. They're extremely useful as a lubricant in some cases, and they're as a platform for other chemistry.
So what do you think was the most rewarding part of your work?
Well, finding molecules in space.
Mm-hmm. And what was I know there's probably a lot of ways of doing that, but can you tell us maybe a notable way that you did that?
Well, using radio astronomy, because the spectrum is well suited for cold gas. I mean, you expect molecules at radio wavelengths to only be visible in pretty cold gas.
Mm-hmm.
And there just isn't enough energy in space to make, say, carbon monoxide, even though it's a very abundant molecule on Earth. But it turns out it's very abundant in space for other reasons, that namely the ion-molecule reactions, which hadn't really been thought of up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then a progression on to make bigger molecules like ethyl alcohol is a number of steps along a chain of forming things.
And now that you have retired from your position with the University of Chicago, do you find yourself missing the work?
Well, only certain aspects. I miss the involvement in the work. On the other hand, I'd lost interest in continuing very much further in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I wouldn't say I've lost interest in it.
All right, fair enough. And I'd like to ask a question at this point that I ask all of my interviewees. When you look back on your life as a whole and your career as a whole, what do you think has been the most important lesson that you've learned?
That's a hard question. I guess the importance of working well with others and yet also realizing that there's some things you like to just do yourself because it's more satisfying to have achieved something by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this sort of two-sided thing that I would say has come out of it.
Mm-hmm. And now that you have retired, what occupies your time?
Well, I'm still finishing some of the work that I was working on.
Oh, I see. So you haven't entirely left it.
No.
Can you tell us about that at all?
Well, there's one project that really goes back to about 1966 when I first got involved that doesn't seem to have an adequate solution yet. And we've done some new observations in New Mexico at the Very Large Array. And I'm writing a paper on those results.
Mm-hmm. And when do you hope to have that ready?
Oh, I don't know. It should have been ready before the pandemic. Because that sort of shut me down. We weren't able to use the university facilities my office.
I will tell you this, sir. Everybody has had to find a hobby to cope with the pandemic, and I think you found yours.
Well, I don't know.
As long as it keeps you busy.
Well, as long as mostly I've not been working on this at all during the pandemic. I tell people who worry about me that I just sit and stare out the window. But it isn't, of course, quite like that.
Right.
There are lots of other things to do. The biggest thing that bothered me personally was because of the pandemic, and also because of my injured knee, I was not able to continue being outdoors as much.
Mm-hmm.
And I really missed being outdoors.
Has that changed at all since?
Well, my knee is not recovered enough. I lost a lot during that time where we're sort of locked up.
Gotcha.
It's going to take a while. At best a year, and I don't have all that many years left.
Well, hopefully, knock on wood, you have more than you're giving yourself credit for, sir. Thank you, Dr. Palmer, for taking the time out of your day to share your story with our listeners. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to Marquee Radio. Stay tuned for more in-depth and informative interviews with professionals from all walks of life.